I might get Oscar Weekly.
It's MMO Weekly.
Yes, yes. Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Best part of your week is up. This is Mike, and Oscar Weekly, MMO Weekly, MMOW for short, however you want to shorten it up and give us the abbreviation. We appreciate it. Hashtag MMOW. This is your weekly recap of the Hollywood week that was and the Hollyweird week to come. I'm your co-host, Mike One. This is co-host also Mike.
Also, Mike, this is a loaded episode, Oscar race update.
A lot to get through, yeah.
It's going to be a long one at the end. We got box office, we got what we're watching, and we got some new segments in the middle. We're going to have some fun with pop culture corner.
Yeah.
We're going to weigh in on a fight, Wilder Fury.
Yeah, we told you we're going to try to rotate some segments in and out. We figured the first couple MMO weeklies were a little bit similar, so now's a good time to start changing it up and show you what we have in store for you guys and dip into our bag of tricks here. But to start, as we always are going to start, we're going to recap what we've been watching this past week. So, Mike, you've actually been watching things, so what do you got on your plate here?
I'm watching a bunch of things. I watched a lot of movies while I prepared podcasts, though.
Okay.
So I kind of half paid attention to them, and here are my takeaways. Skyscraper took my attention away from the document
okay.
a few times because I'm clenching my butt
See?
And my teeth. You know, I'm worried if he's going to make the jump.
Of course.
Some fun scenes involved there.
Is it going to win an Oscar?
It is not going to win anything.
How dare you?
It might win a Razzie for just, expedited plot because, yes, I can watch movies while I do other things.
Uh-huh.
I can multitask. And it is not making any sense whatsoever. Like, I'm like, wait a minute.
It was $6 on Amazon. Black Friday deal, so I had to buy it. I own it now upstairs. Yeah.
Yeah, it's worth watching. It's fun, but there's nonsense at the end, but you know, you'll be the judge. Puzzle is a movie about a competitive puzzle maker. Anyway, it is Kelly MacDonald and
This is not a documentary?
A good cast. They did a nice job. It would have been more interesting as a documentary, but it's more about a midlife crisis for a housewife, and it made good dramatic sense.
Huh.
I like the performances. Again, my attentions were taken away to watch her at work, and they did a nice job with a bunch of scenes. The other movie I watched at home while I'm preparing podcasts was The Little Stranger.
I want to see this one.
I hardly noticed the first 45 minutes.
Yeah, boring.
This was very boring. It was, in the English countryside, a lot of, moaning and groaning in beautiful, elaborate English language about the house and how it's haunted and all that. But, I really enjoyed the last hour. Overall, though, it seems like the studio gave money to Lenny Abrahamson, who directed Room, right? An Oscar
mm-hmm.
winner.
Yep.
And they gave him a bunch of money to make a horror movie, but then he made a strong art film, psychological thriller instead. So they're like, what the hell did we just pay for? The title makes sense, but it's just kind of silly, and you can't market it, and it doesn't make sense in a commercial way. Ruth Wilson is great in it, though. I love her performance. She's really hit her stride as an actress from The Affair, from a couple things I've seen this year. She's awesome. She was in Luther a while back. Love her works. But the big movie I saw this week, I went to the theaters to see Creed 2, Michael.
I have seen reviews. I have not seen Creed 2. I have seen reviews that are all over the map for this one. And even some diehard Rocky fans, like Bill Simmons, we reference him a lot, Cousin Sal, they were born and bred on the Rocky franchise.
Right.
Cousin Sal had a quote during one of the podcasts on the Bill Simmons podcast this week that he was like, I think I've hit my quota with like the can't take this fight speeches.
Because it didn't, that was the plot hole chasm of the whole movie. Like it makes sense, Drago versus Creed. That
mm-hmm.
makes sense.
Of course.
I don't want to, nullify that fact. However, he's like the number one contender for some reason, and he's just fighting in like, your podunk gym in
Russia. Boxing's falling on hard times,
Yeah, but they didn't explain like that. I mean, they could have sold that much
right.
better. Like there's no reason, number one, there's no reason for him to be fighting. He's killing people with like one punch.
Especially after the first movie, you've already established that he's like a legitimate heavyweight contender, right?
Build him up as a number one contender. But I love the way they handled the Drago characters. That was the highlight of the film to me. They really gave them a lot of characterization, a lot of depth, and I love the payoff there. The father-son narrative between the Dragos really made a lot of sense for me.
Oh, so Dolph had a lot of speaking lines, you mean?
Dolph did not, but that's
okay.
good. That's good for Dolph.
Yeah.
And Dolph, he had nice performances. All the performances all the way around were very strong. But, you know, there's just chasms with, like, the unrealistic nature of the promotion of the fight. Plus, it's small scale. Like, so Creed is, like, a superstar as a fighter.
Who's right? fighting in gyms.
No, that's the Drago's fighting in little gyms, okay. right? But Creed is a mega star. Right. And it's like this sitcom of a set. Like, the world shrank. There's Rocky's apartment. There's Creed's little Philadelphia apartment with him and Tessa. And it's just like they could have a sitcom between them and Rocky's. And you can have two little tiny sets there. And then they'll have, all right, they'll go to a gym and they'll have a big fight where Creed is going for the heavyweight championship of the world. But there's like he's like going around the city and nobody, like, all right, they say hi to him at a steak and cheese place. Come on.
He's not being treated like a heavyweight champion. Come on. Yeah, I got
it's like the just small scale. Why did we go such small scale? Like they're trying to make it, you know, a drama, and they're doing okay with it between him and Tessa. I like all that stuff, but it just the chasms in terms of the plot holes. And I really wish they made the imperative of that he has to fight Drago speeches work better. They really didn't.
Did they have the callback to the, I mean, this is obviously the out of the Rocky IV playbook with the Drago character. Did they have the infamous training montage that Rocky did in Rocky IV?
I enjoyed the training montage.
Was he on top of a mountain screaming Drago's name?
They went
name?
Somewhere new to it. It was okay. not a top of All the right. mountain, but where they went, I liked it. I enjoyed all the goods delivered in terms of
did
Rocky
Did he scream
formulas.
Out Drago? Did it echo?
No, but when he's you've seen the GIFs in the trailers right now. When he's punching a flame,
right?
That's cool. That's cool. I'm in. And he's punching a flame.
You're not going to hit anything.
No, but he's getting his work in. That's, all right. That's really cool. And he's training in the water, which he did in the first Creed movie. So I liked all that. But the last thing I'll say what I'm watching, I watched a fight last night, Wilder Fury.
More boxing. Big boxing week for you.
It was a big boxing week for me. I never have big boxing weeks, but here we go. I cannot believe Fury got up from those knockdowns. And it was a crazy fight in the sense that Fury's dominating the fight. He's the better boxer. But I love boxing when it's good, and you have a 6'9" guy, you have a 6'7" guy. One's the puncher, one's the boxer. It's awesome. Now let's have these guys fight for three in a row.
Well,
please.
You're gonna get it because you know the ending by now. But it was, a split decision or a draw. How do you classify it?
I get the split decision a little bit here okay. because you know. What Wilder did not do a lot in that fight. I thought he won more rounds than they gave him credit for. Mayweather's like, they interviewed him middle of the fight, and he's like, yeah, I would give all the rounds to Fury so far. I don't think that is necessarily the case. Who am I to disagree with Mayweather? And then, of course, all the judges and all the commentators at ringside, they're like, oh, yeah, he's right. Mayweather's right. They all, if they want their jobs tomorrow, they have to agree with him. But, you know, crazy that Wilder is such a great puncher, and he's just forcing it all fight, and he finally gets at him in rounds 9 and 12, knocks him down in 9, knocks him down again in 12. All Fury had to do was stay away from him. It was like a Rocky right. plot. Fury just stay away from him. He wins the fight. He wins the belt. Then he's probably him versus Joshua next because right. they're both from, you know, the across the pond
Another
there.
Another giant man, yeah.
But now we'll probably get a Wilder Fury 2, and then we'll get whoever wins to fight Joshua.
These split
I like
decisions
it.
are hurting this. I mean, not that you could hurt the sport of boxing
it
anymore,
feels
I
fixed,
think.
Yeah,
it's just that aspect of it. It does feel like but a fixed event.
To come back to it, I think it would have been hard to give Fury the win after he just got tattooed in that last round, and he got knocked down twice there in the late rounds. It would have been hard to like call him the winner. Everybody would have been screaming about it in another way because Wilder thought he knocked him down. It knocked him out for good.
Right.
And he caught up at 9, which is like the Undertaker there.
Sat up. I saw that gif.
Unreal.
Yeah.
Unreal that he could get up
well,
after he
nice
got
that
hit
we have
twice.
Legitimate heavyweight boxing matches that matter.
And
again.
They're huge. Like, think yeah. about it. Lennox Lewis dominated. He was bigger than everybody else. The Klitschko's dominated bigger than anybody else. Now you have a 6'9", a 6'7", a 6'6" guy. Right. They're at the top of the
legitimate
sport.
Contenders that can actually
and
fight
they're
each
all
other.
Big. Yeah. And they can all make it
That's
for
really
decent
nice.
Fights.
We haven't had that in a while. And boxing hasn't been relevant at all in a while, aside from these super fights with Mayweather, Pacquiao, etc. that are just
moneymakers. I'd pay to see another one. So
that's good. That's good. I'm glad to hear
Mike,
that.
Mike, what have you been watching?
I don't know. I don't know where time goes. I like I caught up on some old reality TV because I still watch Survivor. I haven't seen it in 3 weeks.
You still chipping away at Making a Murderer, or did you fall
No,
off?
I finished Making a Murderer. Oh, I got that off. I got that settled.
What did you think
Stephen
of the
Avery is being railroaded. It's a gross miscarriage of justice.
Did you like all the red herrings? Did you enjoy that structural aspect of it?
Yeah, it was they told it in a really nice and kind of like a mystery whodunit type way, even though I like the way they ended it. I still think season one was better. That lawyer, that defense lawyer that Stephen Avery has now is a fascinating character. I wish I want more of her. Like, whatever cases she's on,
I
would like to see.
Give her a reality show.
Yeah, I would watch that 100%. I think her mind is fascinating. I don't know where she has the resources to call in all these experts and work with them. She's got to be just rolling in money to have that at her expense. But anyway, I watched that. I watched some reality TV, The Challenge. I watched the reunion show. I'm a garbage TV person a lot. You can tell that rolls over to my movie selection as well sometimes.
I wonder if you need, like, when you need to rest your brain, you don't want to watch Oscar movies. You want to watch just dumb entertainment.
Like pro wrestling and like, yeah.
Well, you just
want
to watch
sense.
A different kind of entertainment so that'll, that's
I think that's true. It's something I don't have to think about in depth at least, but I want to watch something new, but I for whatever reason, I'm so hesitant to start a new, like Ozark on Netflix. I've heard good things about, but I just can't dive in.
All my TV watching has gone down a cliff because I used to watch The Americans and Mr. Robot and Halt and Catch Fire, and I still have seasons that I got to finish on all three of those.
And we're too busy watching all these heavy dramas that we just want to turn our brain off. So I usually just default to listening to podcasts and watching the WWE Network, and that's my watching for the week. But again, I'm a garbage person.
But you have a shout out to the audience.
Yeah.
You want to know.
This is where I'm at now. Like, Ozark is the only thing I have in my mind, and I keep avoiding it. So I'm open to suggestions. I leave it up to you, dear audience.
But you have a bias. You have type of genre you don't
I have one that's very specific that doesn't work for me. Please don't suggest Game of Thrones. Don't suggest fantasy
pieces. This saddens
pieces.
Me.
I've tried it 3 times to get into it.
Because it is the imperative watch right now. Right. Because it's coming out with its final season in April, the end of April. We finally got that start date.
Right.
And you should be watching Game of Thrones.
Know.
All of them. You should enjoy them.
Garbage. Human beings.
Here's the problem. Our podcast would go from like 4 a week down to 1 a week, so I'm not encouraging you too much. You're doing it. You can rationalize the fact that we have to keep going strong.
Yeah,
here
it's for the good of the brand.
Good of the brand.
It's just I've tried it 3 times. The fantasy, it's a combination of things that don't appeal to me. Fantasy, I've never really been big on. The medieval times, those set period piece dramas, I've never really been big on, and so it's just a combination of those things.
I'm doing a deep dive again. I'm listening to Fire and Blood every morning with the dog about an hour a morning.
I
dog
wish
in
I
the
could
woods.
Get into it.
Yeah, I'm listening to the prequel.
I get shamed
book.
Like a leper in those times when I tell people I don't watch Game of Thrones. Like, you don't watch Game of Thrones? No, it doesn't do it for me.
I felt so like embarrassed of myself yesterday. I'm walking the dog around the block this time, and I bumped into a neighbor that I know, and I kept it on, and it's like, I forget the name of the narrator, but he's like an old British thespian, and he's just like, in the Targaryen household, blah, blah, blah. And the guy's like looking at me like sideways, like, what are you listening to?
I have to go.
Good to see you. Good to see you, Ralph. I'll keep walking this way.
So, yes, I am open to suggestions. If you have anything that you are sure that you loved or that I would like or anything, I think The Shield is like the greatest program of all time. That's one of my favorite TV shows. The Wire, obviously, as well. Sopranos, all those big dramas I like.
Right.
Nothing medieval, nothing fantasy, but I'm open to suggestions. I want to binge something now that Making a Murderer is over. I got nothing.
You're ready. You're ready for one more. So let Mike know what you want him to watch.
Please. And if you say Game of Thrones, I'll block you. That's how this will end. Usually we transition from what we're watching at this top to a 6 degrees. We're kicking 6 degrees down the road
a little bit.
We're going to do 1 week.
We got some responses. We need more responses.
Exactly the case. And I didn't get a chance to push it on Twitter yet this week. So Barry Jenkins to Larry Bird. We got a couple responses, but like Mike said, we're going to need more. But I did throw up on Twitter a couple of these little make-believe games, these choose your own cast.
You need to coin a phrase to give it a...
I
was like, pick them and pitch, or I don't have any good phrases, but Oscar
pitch
film
isn't bad, but yeah,
Oscar film premise creator 2000.
Yes, sir. The OFPC.
Because this was awesome. You had columns, so like pick a director for, you know, directors, pick an actor, pick an actress, pick a studio. They pick one of four for all four categories, and then they have to pitch an Oscar winning film. So this was something that everybody on film Twitter had a ton of fun with, Mike. Great brainchild.
It's what I try, and it's a derivative of some other stuff that that's happened in other areas of social media, and I see it with basketball all the time, like pick your starting five and people are worth $5, $4. This one I just had, I had two that I put up. There was four rows, one director, a lead actress, lead actor, and a studio, and pitch me your film, pitch me what your Oscar winning or Oscar contending film will be. And I had another one I put up that was, you had a budget of $14, $5 for a superstar to pick among five, $4 for a young stud that's under 40, you can pick among five, $3 for an established vet. Pick four of those, as well as $2 for an up-and-comer. Keep it within $14 and pitch me your film. We had a couple that stood out to us, so instead of going over 6 degrees, we're going to give some shout-outs here for some people that did well with these two exercises, I guess.
Yeah, Ryan L. Terry, a friend of ours from RL Terry, RealView, RELLview.com, he said, he picked director Jordan Peele, actress Margot Robbie, actor Timothy Chalamet, A24, and he said, from A24 comes Peele's incest. Robbie and Chalamet star in a movie that will terrify you with its exploration of family drama around a sinister coven's incestuous practices that plague and a community, causing anomalies. So
many buzzwords in that description, like, too.
Sounds like a novel as well. I mean, if you're going generational, anomalies.
It sounds like he just watched Suspiria, the coven in there.
Well, I'm not going to lie, though. Look, I understand that incest is wrong, but Timothy Chalamet.
That's always a good sentence to start.
A rough premise for me, preface to what I'm going to say here, but Margot Robbie and Timothy Chalamet are not related. I know this in my non-suspension of disbelief here, so I'm going to say this is pretty hot. I'm not going to feel bad about it, because I know I'm a bad person, but I know it's not real incest.
Just
so
as long as you know you're a bad person, that's what matters here.
I know it's not incest, though, in reality.
Well, look, you're on to something, the weirdness of that statement aside. If you got Chalamet and Robbie to share the screen, especially under Peele's direction, especially, I think he picked the right studio, too. A24 would be a great piece drama for this weird, sinister plot undertone.
I don't know how many people are going to see the movie called Incest, though.
Yeah, you'd have to workshop the title. I agree. You definitely have to. Or it's going to be really niche for the Halloween horrors slot.
True. Very niche. Very niche. Mike, the next one from And the Runner Up at Oscar Runner Up on Twitter said they want Luca Guadagnino, A24, and it's a psychodrama about a socialite, Glenn Close, whose assistant, Daniel Radcliffe, secretly hates her and seduces her husband. The husband gets Radcliffe a major career promotion, but he and Close still remain in each other's lives, and they eventually plot to kill each other. They add, but there's a twist. Close and Radcliffe realize they should really be directing their ire at the husband and plot to kill him instead. I think I just want another dangerous liaison.
And I'm glad he hit the I think I want another before I got to him, because I was like, you're pitching Dial M for Murder and Strangers on a Train, basically.
I don't remember Dial M for Murder. There was a double cross in Dial M for Murder at the end of it?
Yes. It's like a double cross on a double cross. It's a very Hitchcockian idea is what rang the bell for me, because I'm with you. I love this twist and I love this plot, and I would absolutely, there's not a pitch we had from this that I wouldn't absolutely pay money to see.
True.
And this is one of them. I would absolutely be in line for this movie. No question.
Film Inquiry Podcast Network at Film Inquiry Pod said they like Cuaron, Kerry Washington, Daniel Kaluuya, and A24.
A24 got a lot of play.
After Roma, let's get Cuaron back into the genre game. Washington and Kaluuya play a recently married couple whose island honeymoon gets interrupted by zombies.
Did not see that coming.
Why not, right? A zombie movie in the same way that Personal Shopper was a ghost story, a human story first, zombie movie second. I want that Cuaron subtlety. $400 million box office guarantee from Film Inquiry Podcast Network here. Academy Award nominee guarantee, or no, they don't say guarantee on that, but they guarantee the box office, and they say original screenplay and best actress. It's all happening.
Okay, you lost me at the $400 million. I think A24's best product ever did like 120 or something like that. Don't quote me on that. I remember doing research and being like, 400? Good Lord. That's a Marvel. Maybe if Marvel did it, but that aside, great premise for a film here, and I would absolutely see Kerry Washington and Daniel Kaluuya might be like a dream pairing. And if a non-human entity like a zombie is going to be humanized, I think Cuarón could be the guy to do it.
Cuarón and Kaluuya.
Right.
And Kerry Washington powering that ship. I agree. I think I want the zombie genre to be elevated for the Oscars. This is asking a lot. But I don't know if it ever will be. Talking about the Rocky plots getting stale. Zombie plots.
Well, it would be a new take, at least, on zombies.
We just had the year of the zombie foreign art film. That's mentioned. This before. There's like three or four that we reviewed thus far that I kind of half enjoyed. And you never know. You never know down the line. One more here, Mike. This is at Award Circuit. Clayton Davis, our buddy over there.
Yeah, great guy.
Says, Marvel Studios presents a film directed by Alfonso Cuarón, starring Margot Robbie and Daniel Kaluuya. Who go to space to find remains of all the shuttle explosions from Gravity, the movie Gravity, but encounter the Guardians of the Galaxy, or what's left of them after Infinity War.
I liked it. It's the dual studio crossover event, and this is under the umbrella when Disney actually buys everything, right?
Yeah, how unrealistic is this? It really is not that unrealistic. I mean, in 2025, when Disney owns WB, after it owns Fox, and gradually overtaking everything, then why wouldn't you have, you know, two-time Oscar winner, three-time Oscar winner Alfonso Cuarón by then have his own cinematic universe, and you mix cinematic universe, but this is the everything combined cinematic universe.
Robbie would have to get out of her DC deal, which may also happen depending on how, if they screw up.
They'll own DC by then too.
Right. So this is, we're on the verge of this picture.
What
is what
if
we're
she
saying.
Is Harley Quinn in this?
And is Daniel Kaluuya his character
from Black Panther? Yeah. Either any one of those three is fine. They go to space. It's a genius.
I love it. Absolutely. And God, listen, have given me so much more. Our listeners have done so much more creatively and shown more creativity than I could have ever hoped for, and that's why we keep, you know, your creativity is what spurs us coming up with these new ways to try to flex your muscles, because we love reading what you guys present.
If you're not following us on Twitter and you want to play along with these, then and definitely do start doing that.
Yes,
and,
please. And we love seeing it. We love reading them. They give us, they just tickle our fancy. That's kind of our subtitle for the MMO podcast lately. The fancy ticklers.
The fancy tickling. Your fancy will be tickled. And if it's ticklish right now, you need to follow us at MM and Oscar. We do a lot of games. We give you insights into a lot of great other podcasts and websites to read in terms of your film Twitter and your film news. So
yeah, so we got more games in the pipeline like those for you. We got 6 Degrees of MMO that's going to be coming up next week on our MMO Weekly, which again, just as means a reminder, it's going to be Barry Jenkins, Moonlight director, if Beale Street Could Talk director, going to, of course, his pal, legendary Boston Celtics player Larry Bird, who what?
Naturally.
I've actually heard, I think your brother said it was easier to do Bird than it was to do Jenkins, which blows my mind, and I cannot possibly believe is true, but we'll see what people have. We're going to put that up on Twitter
You can do it.
Yeah, I can't wait. And again, it's these kind of pitches that give me hope. You are creative way more than we are, so let's see it. Let's see what you come up with. Barry Jenkins to Larry Bird, 6 Degrees of MMO. Get the hashtag at MM and Oscar on Twitter, and instead of doing a top story of the week, we got a pop culture corner segment, so let's get into that.
Pop culture corner.
Yes, the seductive intro did tell you this is the pop culture corner, and this is we haven't had one of these yet for MMO Weekly. We take a tangentially related to the movie industry story that's happening in pop culture. Got a lot of clicks out there in internet land and just pass comment on it. And for this week, for our first pop culture corner segment, Amanda Bynes got the cover of Paper Magazine. It's again going with the Break the Internet headline, as it does usually around Thanksgiving time every year. Paper is also the mag that you'll know gained notoriety years ago, about 2 or 3 years ago, by having Kim Kardashian grace their cover in that now infamous picture with the champagne shooting up and going over her head and filling up a glass that was on her derriere there. And it was the Break the Internet Kim Kardashian.
Wait, Kim Kardashian showed her butt in the magazine?
Some may call it exploitation. I don't know that I personally would, but that's been rumored. Yes, Amanda Bynes graced their cover of their Thanksgiving
Fascinating
issue.
Article.
It really was. And it was Amanda Bynes, a human, passing comments on Amanda Bynes, actor, sabotaging her own career. It was really an interesting read and an interesting profile. She haven't heard from the former All That cast member in quite some time. There's been little pop-ups on Twitter occasionally, but by and large, she tweeted that she quit acting sometime in 2011 and really hasn't been heard from since, aside from some jabs and some desperate media trying to keep her name she was obviously experiencing this downward spiral, and the media, some media outlets clung to that, and that was kind of sad to see, but it is also a legitimate movie star that was making news at the time. So yeah,
the life of a child actor is not an easy one. You're matured up. You're basically thrust into a workaholic job, right?
Yeah, you know, and that's
you, what
she
for you to be a successful actor, you're a workaholic. Yeah. And as a kid, to force her to do that without all the normal socialization of a regular high school kid in school, having a normal life, she's thrust into the spotlight. And it's not just a demanding job, but it's a demanding job in front of the world, right?
Yeah.
And all the paparazzi and all. Oh, my God. How she came out of it alive, I'll never know. I mean, how do they all do? I'll never know. These are strong people in terms of their, you know, moral centers. At the end of the day, I'm glad to hear the family got her out of the drugs or helped her out of the drugs, even though, you know, it takes your own decision making to get you there from rock bottom. We've come to understand at least that in terms of the overall epidemic going out there around now with all the opiates, etc. And it was fascinating to read how she has gone back to school. She got her associate's degree.
It's
she's
awesome.
Going for her bachelor's at the Fashion Institute. And if this, you know, layout is any indication, she's going to do fine in the fashion industry.
It really was. And she didn't pull any punches on herself. And that's kind of why I thought it was so interesting. It wasn't a puff piece. It wasn't a reclamation project. It was her saying, wow, I fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she confirmed the drug use, and she even spoke about the certain substances that she did abuse and once she stayed away from, and she confirmed the tabloids that had her headlines for various things. She said, I was a mess on the set. I freaked out when I was on the set of Hall Pass in the movie. She was supposed to have a cameo in that film. They ended up pulling it because she couldn't deal with herself then.
Yeah.
She confirmed her drug use, like I said, and it was especially sad because she was having this breakdown right in the middle of this YouTube culture we now live in. Where, you know, celebrities are they're scrutinized more than ever because there's so many outlets and 24/7 coverage, but they're also celebrated for their stature more so than any time previously. Where so now even the slightest meltdown becomes fodder for water cooler conversation, right? Or these YouTube
networks. It's magnified 100,000
times. Yeah, exactly. And so she knew that, and she was very cognizant of that, and she said, that wasn't me. I wasn't doing well. I'm a different person on drugs. I've been clean for 4 years. God bless her. Good for her. Good for anybody that kicked that aside and is able to live soberly. And she said that I'm ready to make my way now in the fashion industry.
And she also said she'd like to get back into acting too, which was interesting. I wonder if it's hint, hint, Hollywood. Here I am looking this good now at 32. You know, hire me again. I was a transcendent talent back in the day.
And that's kind of the overall point for me too. It's like she's only 32.
Sure.
And she's 32 with, what, 25 years of experience being in front of a camera already?
Absolutely.
That's insane. Why wouldn't she be an asset to any production, really? I mean, I think, I don't think it's gotten to the level of she's been as, I don't like to use the word poison, but as Lindsay Lohan or some of the other starlets we saw fall by the wayside.
Well, I'm sure she's a totally different personality now than when she was poisonous on drugs.
Right.
And that would make you poisonous to a production, no question about it. Even then, though, it was fun to see her basically discover Channing Tatum.
Yeah,
that article,
and people
that
forget
little nugget.
That. She said that she advocated for Channing Tatum to get the male lead and She's the Man, that movie she
and
did.
And they're like, no, he's only done Mountain Dew commercials, number one, but also so he's like so much older than all you kids. And she made a funny comment. Like, it won't matter to teenage girls. Trust
he
me.
He is a star.
Trust
yes.
me. Yeah,
so good for her. Love to see it. Love to read it. Paper does, actually, that Thanksgiving article, the Thanksgiving magazine, that issue is very important for them every year. It's where they have their story they've been working on all year thrust to their front. And they ask it to break the internet. And I think a lot of people are going to root for Amanda Bynes now. It's certainly, at least to me, read as very real and very humbling.
Yes.
And so with that in mind, if that's the real Amanda Bynes now that we have, I'm rooting for her.
Got me rooting for her, too. She's such a talent.
I would love to see her and more stuff. And hopefully she's going to have her own clothing line when she's done with fashion school. And she seems to be very guarded against people that she does allow in her life now. So good for you, Amanda. And we're all rooting for you, especially as someone that was raised on all that in the Amanda Show when I was younger.
True.
I'm all in for
me
it, man.
Too. Me too.
Yeah, so good for you. And that's your first dose of the Pop Culture Corner. Again, not exactly movie related, but maybe it will be someday soon again.
Sure.
Let's go into some box office blitz here. Talk about what happened this weekend. Not a whole lot of movement or anything new. Actually, the top four movies, top five, six movies were all the same. Slight difference as the number two movie from last week went down to three. That was Creed 2. And the number three movie from last week, The Grinch, went back up to two because all that does is make money.
Kids movies. animated animals talking. They make money.
Unbelievable.
And crazy.
Ralph Breaks the Internet stayed at number one this week. Weekend gross of $25.7 million, a little above that. It dropped about 50% from previous last week, but it's still on the verge of $120 million domestically. That's a success. That doesn't surprise anyone, right?
No.
Yeah. The Dr. Seuss's The Grinch might be a little bit of a surprise. It did cross the $200 million plateau for the domestic box office number. It made another $17 million and is now at $203.5 million.
Wow.
Great take for that, The Grinch. There's money in The Grinch still.
Money in Dr. Seuss still?
Yeah. Blows my mind.
Remaking The Grinch. We were like, does anybody need this? Because we can all watch the animated Christmas special, which is beautiful. We just had Jim Carrey's version. But no, they're smart.
You want to guess what number five was? I know you don't have it in front of you.
Grindelwald?
Bohemian Rhapsody. Grindelwald was four. Bohemian Rhapsody finished. Again, only one new product came out this week and made the top
Music 10. Movies are back.
But Bohemian Rhapsody, another 8 million on 3,000 screens still. It actually increased its theater count from last week. It's got 164.4 million on a $52 million budget right now. That's its domestic gross, 164.4. Rami Malek.
It's almost got to be 500 million worldwide, right?
It's unbelievable. Right now, its worldwide take is 539.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's doing well.
It's pretty good. Pretty good.
Again, the only new product that cracked the top 10 this weekend in the box office, The Possession of Hannah Grace. Maybe a disappointing 6.5 million debut. It comes in at number 7. It's got 10.6 right now worldwide. It made back its money in the production budget. Production was only 9.5 million. It's less than a 90-minute movie. It's got one of the stars from Pretty Little Liars in it.
Oh, it'll probably make money then. Darn it. Is it
darn it!
No, darn it. Why do we need more possession of anybody's movies?
Just keep them coming. Come on. I will watch them. I'm going to watch this for sure when it comes on TV.
No, I'm not in for that. But here's what I was surprised with the box office in terms of the scheduling, Mike. You know, we have 3 weeks for the window of Creed 2 and Ralph Breaks the Internet. Why do we have 3 weeks, just basically the rest of Hollywood, seeding to all these carryovers, not just for the Thanksgiving and the follow-up, but this coming week as well?
It is an interesting point in that there's been no new, I mean, we keep hyping about how the Oscar properties, those for the most part don't seem to be getting their wide releases until January, the new year.
Yeah, right? I wonder if it was an aberration where they figured like The Favorite would be coming to everywhere else by now and it didn't happen. If Beale Street or none of them are really expanding that much. I mean, I'm looking at the same movies to watch at the theaters last week as I am this week. And I'm a little weirded out by that. We want to do more OSPs, but we can't really do them until we...
There's nothing that we can get our hands on.
Yeah, we watch movies with you folks, so here we are, waiting another week, and then they'll all come at once, and we'll have to work 1,000 hours a week.
For what it's worth, the same weekend last year in 2017, this box office is actually up about 10% from what last year's was. Last year only made $99 million the first weekend in the November, December carryover.
Well, I would figure it's a customary carryover kind of a week. All the Thanksgiving movies would be carried over 1 week. I'm just surprised it's 2 weeks and they're given a 3 week window. Ralph Breaks the Internet to win 3 weeks in a row.
So. Yeah, I'm surprised by that myself, but we'll see how it plays out for the rest of the year. Doesn't seem to be a lot of stuff opening wide anytime soon, but as far as Oscars go, we got a lot of stuff coming up this week, limited release, and that's how we're going to start our Do You Care? Oh, give me the Oscar, not Bradley Cooper. But yeah, let's talk about some limited releases, Mike.
We have Ben is Back, Mary Queen of Scots, Schindler's List getting a 2018 re-release, and Vox Lux. We've previewed these many a time. We've reviewed their trailers. They're all limited on December 7th. We also have Once Upon a Deadpool the following Wednesday, going nationwide as a PG-13 remake.
And it'll win the box office, too. Redux, this is genius by Disney.
Redux of Deadpool 2. So what do you care about here, Michael?
Everything but Deadpool.
Yeah, I don't want to see Deadpool. I kind of do. Did we kind of jump the gun on that?
Well,
I'm not going to. But
yeah, I don't want to encourage this. And this is genius by Disney. If they were able to forecast, like we just talked about in the box office segment, how there's nothing new really coming out. Mm-hmm. So if they were able to forecast that and plan for this re-release of Deadpool just for that purpose, to see, look, we don't need an R-rated superhero movie to be number one at the box office.
Let's film 8 scenes with Fred Savage doing a Princess Bride parody in one day with Ryan Reynolds. and therefore now we have a new nationwide release on a dead weekend.
I really hope this isn't as nefarious as we think it is.
It might be genius, though. We might be able to...
Just leave Deadpool as an R. You can have these recuts, right, but just leave it as an R. Ben is back. I'm interested to see, as well as Mary Queen of Scots.
Vox Lux. Yeah, we like Lux all three. Well, of those, yeah.
I'm amazed still that there has not been serious momentum for either of those performances in Mary Queen of Scots with any of the award circles that we're talking about.
I might have a little hot take remorse, though, with Deadpool, but I can't do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to have some willpower. Mike, you have a story about the house that Jack built.
Yeah. Why is this surprising to people? So the house that Jack built, Lars von Trier, who is, again, a crazy person and allowed to make movies, hosted an unsanctioned screening of his new movie, A House That Jack Built, showing a serial murderer mutilating victims, some that were women and children. The MPAA, which, again, is the body that hands down sanctions, regulations, and those famous ratings are PG-13, PG. They came in and said that he broke the rules and he should be punished for it. Do you care about this story, Michael?
I do care about it. I care about it so much that I really do not want to see the house that Jack built now. It's cemented in my brain.
We will be doing an 18-part series.
Film critics, they are not the most squeamish of people. We see a lot of movies. We see a lot of horror movies. You know, 200 movies plus for me this year. 203, I think, right now. And I've seen a lot of horror movies. I'm not that scared of seeing a gross movie. And yet, you have film critics the world over now, Michael, walking out of these screenings. Is it torture porn? Is it just slow mutilation? What are these slowly killing people? It's just going to be so gross that you're getting film critics of all people to walk out on your movie?
But what do you expect with Lars von Trier? No, I don't care about this. In 2018, this is what Lars von Trier movies should be. You don't have to watch them.
He made so many good movies back in the day that weren't just insanely shocking and gruesomely violent or sexual. Like before Nymphomaniac, Antichrist, and this one, you had Dogville and Dancer in the Dark, and you had Manderley, and you had The Boss of It All. You had good movies that were artistic and were innovative. And go back to that, please, Lars.
Well, maybe something bad happened in his life and he doesn't take bad news
something
well.
Something bad must have happened. Or maybe he's a serial killer on the side.
Look forward to our 22
that
part
is slander that rewatch. I'm going to walk back right now. No, of course not. But if he's breaking MPAA rules, that's got to be really disgusting.
Or really smart, because it's keeping a name of a movie that people otherwise probably would not see in the public eye. I mean, how do you get... You remember the stories from when The Exorcist came out. It was banned from so many theaters. People were running out of theaters. Like, that's kind of the only way you keep your name in the headlines for horror movies anymore is to probably go above and beyond and be so disgusting. Again, you don't have to watch it. We probably will not.
I am afraid of seeing this. I am afraid of watching Apostle, and that's getting good reviews. I am afraid of watching Climax. Those are the three this year.
Climax is getting great reviews, by the way.
I've tweeted about this. I am afraid to watch all three of those films because of what those filmmakers
have
done to me.
We're going to watch Climax. I'll watch it once, and the second time, I will just watch you watching Climax for the first time. Mike, Aquaman is tracking for a $65 million opening over Christmas week. Do you care about this?
I care about it because it might be the savior for DC after, or at least that universe of DC. And unfortunately, we talked about this in a previous episode. Like, we don't want Aquaman and Wonder Woman have to anchor the Justice League universe anymore. We want, like, Harley Quinn versus Wonder Woman. I agree with you in that sentiment. So if James Wan saves this franchise and basically, you know, tentpoles the entire Justice League storyline, which is gone downhill after Superman leaves and Batman leaves. So Superman and Batman are not going to be in it. And we're just going to have... I mean, I'd like a Flash movie, I think, maybe. I don't know. But
take one, but you're not going to get one until 2021, apparently.
Aquaman was kind of... He wasn't a great character in that Justice League movie. And here we have him just blown out to a monster epic. James Wan is good, though. So James Wan pulls it off. Maybe we have a chance in hell if he gets the next Justice League.
$160 million reported budget, according to Wikipedia. $65 million as an opening would be the lowest, by far, opening weekend for any DCEU created worlds, whatever the hashtag name is they're going with now, would be the lowest opening for a DC movie.
Well, that was what happened for Justice League, where it was a big budget and it won the weekend, but it still didn't come close. They need these movies to make like $2 billion. They need to make $1 billion
at least. Justice League would outpace $65 million by about $30 million.
But this is open. Not the same budget like Justice League budget.
$160 million is a lot. If you open at $65 million, that's what the Grinch did a couple of weeks ago. We said you open at $65 million, you're usually guaranteed $200 million domestically. Mm-hmm. So on a $160 million budget, you open at $65 million, you get $250 million domestically with another $700 million. So you're close to $1 billion worldwide.
But it probably opens around the world though. It'll play well around the world with they've been notorious for CG heavy animated action movies. They're playing well around the world. You got Jason Momoa and Willem Dafoe. You got star power here.
You do.
James Wan. Yeah, it might play.
Well, in line, you've been on record saying how you're hesitant about this movie. Esquire had an entire article utilizing quotes from various review sources, all of which range from Ben Meckler's calling it a, quote, undersea Star Wars, to IGN's Tom Jorgensen calling it a, quote, best DC movie since The Dark Knight.
Getting good buzz. It has good buzz right now.
Do you care enough about these good buzz, this good reviews, this good word of mouth, to get less pessimistic about your expectations?
If this one comes out with good reviews, and I'll trust those good reviews because I like James Wan movies. I like The Conjuring and Insidious movies. I like The Saw. I'm in, so I'll see it if it gets a good review. So we'll let you know.
Very hopeful. You want it to do good. Again, it's always better when DC and Marvel have properties that are doing well, and you want the legend of James Wan to kind of expand. Right? Like, we love him. We think he's a very talented director and a very talented at obviously starting franchises that go on to make $1 zillion. So hopefully that $65 million opening, if that's the number Aquaman does hit, hopefully it does a little better. But if it does end at 65, hopefully it can sustain momentum and do well. And we'll see. We're going to be here to comment on it as it happens. We'll go into the final segment.
The
main event, as Mike calls it, the Oscar race update.
The Oscar goes to...
And the winner is...
And the Oscar goes to...
The winner is...
The Oscar goes to
MMOW's Oscar Race Update.
New segments, new introductions, new drops this week. Mike, the Oscar Race Update, what do we have this week?
So the Gotham Awards, to catch you up, The Rider wins Best Film. We have Bo Burnham and Elsie Fisher from 8th Grade. They won the two breakthrough awards for director and actor.
Probably rightfully so, right?
Yeah, I love that. I love that they're winning. I wish they weren't pigeonholed in this category, but it's still good buzz. They're winning awards and precursors, so they got a chance.
I have nothing to add because those are my exact thoughts as well.
First Reform screenplay beat out The Favorite, which was kind of a surprise going into the weekend. Coming out of it with all these other precursors, First Reform wins a bunch. Mm-hmm. We reviewed that. Go back to that OSB. Here was the shock of the night for me. Hail County This Morning, This Evening beat Won't You Be My Neighbor for Best Documentary. And then Won't You Be My Neighbor beat out Hale County, plus basically all the other movies nominated for the Gotham Awards, 14 other films in total, to win the Audience Award.
I don't know why critics that choose these awards, that vote on these, seem to use the documentary, at least the last 2 years, seem to use the documentary category to, like, protest. Jane last year didn't make the cut in the Academy Awards. It won a bunch of precursors. Everyone thought it was the best documentary of the year. Doesn't even make the Oscars field of five. Won't You Be My Neighbor? People are saying it's one of the best documentaries of all time, and now it's not going to beat Hale County This Morning, This Evening. Granted, we haven't seen it. I haven't seen it, at least.
I haven't seen it either yet. We will. Here's the thing. Like, Won't You Be My Neighbor is one of the best documentaries of the last 5 years, at least.
I would
agree. And I just can't get over the fact that it's losing in a lot of these precursor award shows, because it is just like, it's like in sports, the eye test. This is a top prospect. This is a top athlete. The eye test, Won't You Be My Neighbor, is just better.
It's just better.
It's a great movie. It's going to be in everybody's top fives on the year. Why aren't we giving it awards? Because we're bored of it? Because it made too much money?
How can you even be bored of it?
Just pick the best movie. God damn it. All you jerk-offs. Pick the best movie. This is why we exist, though. So fine. We get to rage a little bit.
What else we got?
Best Actress Toni Collette wins for Hereditary. Yeah! Over Glenn Close from The Wife. So that is a good sign. It's a rare good sign for Toni Collette right now.
She needs as much good news and momentum. We can't do it ourselves.
No,
it can't just be us.
We also had First Reform's Ethan Hawke beat out Richard E. Grant and Ben Foster to win Best Actor. So that was interesting. That number one, I mean, they put all the actors in the same categories, supporting and leads. But we have Ethan Hawke defeating bona fide Oscar contenders in that category.
I'll have more to say about Ethan Hawke as we go on here.
So that's the Gotham Awards. So again, to bring us full circle, we have The Rider defeating The Favorite and If Beale Street Could Talk for Best Film.
That's why we did an OSP of The Rider that came out last week. We probably weren't going to do it unless it made a nomination cut for the Academy Awards, because the momentum, it seemed to be, yeah, this is a very nice movie, but there was no really awards speak for it. And then out of nowhere, essentially, not to downplay it, but really out of the blue, it beats heavy, heavy favorites, pardon the pun, to get the best feature at the Gotham Awards here. It was an upset. It was certainly a big victory for it, and it means a lot for its awards chances. But we did a full-fledged breakdown of it. Go check out our Oscar Sprint profile we did.
So to give you a quick breakdown of what happened last year at the Gothams, we had Call Me By Your Name win Best Feature. Breakthrough was Jordan Peele. We had The Florida Project, Get Out, Good Time, I, Tonya nominated. We had Strong Island win for Best Documentary, but we didn't have an obvious favorite in that category last year. Jane was not in there. Best Actor was James Franco. Disaster Artist, Saoirse Ronan. Lady Bird, Best Actress. Screenplay, Get Out's Jordan Peele. Chalamet, Breakthrough Actor. So, you know, a lot of nominees at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Winners.
As far as Best Feature, too, they were on a run there. 1, 2, 3 years in a row they had, starting with 2014's Birdman, then Spotlight, Moonlight. The winner of the Gotham Best Picture ended up winning the Academy Award for Best Picture.
Wow.
Broken up last year, but again, they picked Call Me By Your Name as the winner.
Well, it's been the indie filmassance lately, so maybe we've talked about it on Twitter. Hollywood Reporter just had an article about how, you know, maybe the Academy is finally getting the hint. They need to make the Oscars relevant again.
It's only been 90 years.
You know, Black Panther, Mary Poppins, and what was the other film? A Star is Born, of course. We need some popular films.
It's gonna happen, and again, it goes back to my theory that the movie watcher is getting smarter, and it's becoming more of a smark, to use another wrestling term, because I can never grow up. It's not the everyday casual viewer. It's if you go to see movies in this day and age, you want to see things specific. And that's kind of lends itself to these awards categories. Let's talk about the National Board of Review, Mike.
Yeah, I would be upset if Green Book beats A Star is Born at the end of the day. It did beat A Star is Born in this category for the National Board of Review Best
Second
Picture.
Time.
Second time it beat it at Toronto, the Tiff Grolsch Award beer with the Crazy Top Award.
Yes.
All right. Green Book also won Viggo Mortensen Best Actor, a surprise over Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, it's not an indicator of Academy success, though. Casey Affleck was the last time the winner here also won Best Actor at the Oscars, and even that was the first time an actor had won both awards since 2006. So it doesn't necessarily mean that much as far as Academy Gold goes.
Now, I saw RBG, and RBG won the Best Documentary. RBG is a triumph in terms of a story about a hero. Here's the problem: the story's not as good as other stories. So the hero is better than other heroes. You know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a better hero. But does that make the movie better? No, it does not. Won't You Be My Neighbor is a superior film to RBG. I'm sorry, superior.
What about Three Identical Strangers compared to RBG?
It's better, in my opinion. That's not enough of an argument. I have an 89 and an 86.
Okay.
An 89 is a much better movie for me, and I have a 92 for Won't You Be My Neighbor. It's a much better movie. It's two whole classifications, three-point classification curves of the Mike and Oscar curve situation. Better. It's way better.
Best animated feature also given out. Incredibles 2 won it over Ralph. Probably okay. Makes sense.
Makes a little sense. Again, our grades, that makes some sense. So we got some saving grace there. Best foreign film, Cold War over Roma?
Got hope.
Yeah, so Cold War getting some buzz there. Director Bradley Cooper over Alfonso Cuarón, which was surprising because Cuarón is being predicted everywhere right now.
Yeah, again, though, doesn't really translate well. Since 2000, this category for the National Board of Review has had nearly twice as many winners who just weren't nominated for director at the Oscars as they have winners who were at least nominated. So again, not the greatest indicator here. May not mean much, but nice to see Cooper get a win there.
Sure, Gaga wins actress. Now, I can see this happening at the end of the day for the Oscars. I'm going to start a little narrative here because we have a lot of major contenders in Best Actress. There's going to be five really strong nominees, however you cut
Absolutely.
It. There might be a top seven, top eight in one of the better years for Best Actress in a while. And we're going to have a lot of them cannibalizing the votes, right? Because a lot of people are going
to be... You would think. It happens every year, especially in the categories that seem to have two or three favorites. And sometimes the compromise candidate does win out. Not saying that Gaga would be that.
She's going to be in the most popular movie, and she's going to have that X factor in terms of her musical performances. Like, we always wondered, what if Tom Cruise ever got nominated for his stunt work? What if he put an Oscar performance and all that stunt work together in the same film? Well, I mean, she's doing something similar. Her musical performances and her acting, both very, very, very strong. And however you want to, you know, stack it up against the rest of the field, you know, you combine those two things, she probably does have an edge.
Yeah, she might. She is a legitimately serious Oscar contender, just as a form of, in terms of the history of the NBR and their Best Actress Award. Clearly, Gaga is more serious an Oscar contender than Meryl Streep was. Streep won it last year. The two leads of The Post actually won the two acting categories at the NBR, the National Board of Review, last year, Streep and Tom Hanks.
Okay, I feel better now. Screenplays go to First Reformed and If Beale Street Could Talk. Original and adapted, respectively. There, First Reformed racking up the screenplay wins so far. That is surprising that it's winning a lot of original screenplays.
It's going to be a running narrative.
Original screenplay is not as strong as adapted screenplay, at least what we thought going into the year, but that might be changing a bit. If Beale Street Could Talk, we're eager to see it. It's been projected in nomination land for adapted screenplay since ever. Now, here's the one that'll get a rise out of Mike One here. Sam Elliott wins for Best Supporting Actor.
This has to stop. This momentum hat. It's a fine performance.
Right.
I'm not even sure I'd call it above average. It's fine.
He looks back, almost crying many a times, and it's very good acting. But their glances, like the glances he gives us, are terrific. Richard E. Grant's a full performance.
Just
though.
Call it a lifetime achievement.
To me, he's not close to Richard E. Grant. He's not close to Timothée Chalamet from Beautiful Boy. It's not close. I agree.
Mahershala? Ali? Green Book?
Oh, my God. And then he should win them all. You're right. No, he's number four. Yeah, he's a distant fourth for me, too.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. No!
No's absolutely correct. He's a distant fourth. But Regina King wins for Best Supporting Actress. We're kind of happy about this, even though we haven't seen that movie yet.
Again, the National Board of Review, not the greatest indicator of Academy success, but it is nice to see that Beale Street is having some success.
She's great in the trailer, though. Yeah. Like, I mean, look, if she wasn't great in the trailer, I'd tell you she's great in the gosh darn trailer. So she's probably good in the movie. Crazy Rich Asians wins for Best Ensemble. Are they just trying to be popular here? Because it's not in the top 10 films, Crazy Rich Asians. If you think it's the best ensemble of the year, I think it's a top, right now it's a top 10 film of the year for me, Crazy Rich Asians.
I have it
I rewatched it, bumped it up. Why isn't it in the top 10 films? Because here's the top 10, Michael. Buster Scruggs, good movie. Black Panther, good movie. Can You Ever Forgive Me? Eighth Grade, First Reform, Beale Street, Mary Poppins, Quiet Place, Roma, Star is Born.
Quiet Place. Yeah, I'm with you. If you think it's the best ensemble, how does it not make the cut for the top 10?
It's better than A Quiet Place by like 6 MMO grading points. 6.
Maybe people are trying to get the that Blunt Krasinski star power couple under their umbrella.
I have begrudging respect for Can You Ever Forgive Me, even though that's one of the most painful rewatches of my life. I didn't want to go to the theater to watch it again. I created a whole podcast for it in terms of getting you ready for an OSP. So we're ready to do it eventually. We'll do it probably when it comes out on video later on. We loved Eighth Grade. First Reformed, another one of those begrudging respect. We have a lot of respect for that.
Yeah, we could see it at least.
So I could see those. Those are on the level. Right. Buster Scruggs, okay, that's a very artistic film. I'm glad it's getting some recognition.
Agreed.
I could see that. That's a well-made movie. Of course, you got the major contenders, Black Panther, Beale Street, Roma, Star is Born. I get all those. Mary Poppins, I'm hopeful that it's up there. But Crazy Rich Asians should have been over A Quiet Place.
Quiet Place.
And First Reformed, I don't see it as a top 10 film of the year for me.
Scott Feinberg knows what he's talking about. Yeah. He has had A Quiet Place up in his front runners or major threats categories for Best Picture forever. And obviously he knows, I mean, here it is in black and white, one of the top 10 films on the National Board of Review. He is tuned in. Somebody somewhere really likes A Quiet Place. And he knows
about it. A lot of people everywhere maybe then really like it. All right, the New York Film Critics Circle, Michael, they picked...
NYFCC.
Yes, they picked awards all over the place as well this week. And they basically announced them over like a 4-hour span or whatever it was. I was tweeting for a long time, it seemed.
You were. And I was very proud of you.
Roma, the big winner on the day, won for Best Picture, Director Alfonso Cuarón, and Cinematography. This makes sense that New York film critics would love Roma.
Yes, it does. Not much to kind of surprise you with there as far as numbers.
Coming out on December 13th, so we'll have an OSP for you ASAP on that. Ethan Hawke won for Best Actor, Michael.
Three times since 2010 has the winner of this NYCFF Best Actor Award won the Oscar for the same category.
Wow.
Since 2014, of the 18 NYCFF winning performances have found themselves at least nominated for the Oscars. So that's a fairly significant indicator. Hawke has been hot and cold lately, but maybe this shows all we need to see in regards to his Oscars chances, at least as far as getting nominated
goes. He's still in my top five at the moment. I do think he's going to get bumped out of my top five after I see Christian Bale and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm guessing, but and Stephen James and If Beale Street, and you know, there's probably a few more there that I'll bump him out for.
Yeah, I'm with you along the lines as far as my personal rankings. I don't know that I'd have him in
there.
Is he
better than Rami Malek?
Well, that's the question, right? I don't know that I would have him in that top five spot, but again,
is he better than Chadwick Boseman? Maybe you can argue there.
There's people that like his performance and like this movie. It's undeniable.
Regina Hall, the surprise of the day, wins for Best Actress from Support the Girls.
Yeah, we're cooking with gas now because only one time since 2010 has the winner of this award here not been nominated for the Best Actress Oscar.
Wow.
That was 2012, Rachel Weisz for The Deep Blue Sea, not the Sam Jackson getting eaten by a shark movie, coincidentally.
That wasn't the remake, the redux of Deep Blue Sea? No?
The artistically done version, yeah.
Okay.
Usually winning this doesn't predict success in winning the Oscar per se since 2000. 17 previous winners of the award here. Only three have won the Oscar, and none since Meryl Streep did in 2011 for The Iron Lady. But this performance has been well off the radar, and obviously there is a correlation between success here and nomination at the Oscars.
She was nowhere on Gold Derby. She was nowhere anywhere with the pundits.
Lead actress has been a huge, huge race this year. We think there's a lot of big names. It's going to be hotly contested. Like you said, she has been nowhere. Does that streak keep up? Is she going to slip in and get one of those five spots come Oscar time?
So she is awesome in this movie. She really is. And she's a top 10 for me on the year. I kind of forgot about her, though. I watched this on VOD, and I thought she was great. I did not love that movie. It's a very slow movie. It's anticlimactic. It's one of those typical art films that kind of, you know, you could really like it, especially if you live the life of a waiter or a waitress,
right,
or a manager there. And I did, I did in a way back in high school, so I kind of, you know, related to it a little bit. But the movie, to me, is strong. It's just not obvious Oscar contender.
But is her performance
enough?
Her
performance is excellent. It really is excellent.
Maybe,
but
there you go.
I wonder if it's on par. I'm going to have to rewatch it now. Is it on par with the Toni Collettes,
right,
and the Melissa McCarthy's, and of course the Lady Gaga's, et cetera. There's Glenn Close.
I mean, think about that. We think Collette, okay, we might be in the minority now for some reason because people don't watch movies, I guess. That's a shot. But we think Collette, Glenn Close, Gaga are shoo-ins. If those are the shoo-ins and Regina Hall rides the momentum success of this, that means there's one spot left.
Right. Here's what's fun about that, though, this nomination. Like, this movie, she's a manager at Hooters, essentially, right?
Right.
This, you know, made-up name for Hooters. And you have her going against Glenn Close, who's the, quote-unquote, wife of a Nobel Prize for Literature award winner. Mm-hmm. So maybe a silver lining of this is, you know, we can recognize a great performance in a movie that isn't about the prestigious film subject matter that other movies are about. So, this is an excellent performance. So I'm going to have to rewatch it and stack it up to these others that we've been
maybe
reviewing for a while.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, got to do it. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse won for Best Animated Film here, Michael.
Okay, so follow me here.
This is something.
I think that Into the Spider-Verse being so well-received as it has been, we haven't had a chance to see it yet, but mm-hmm. I think that's going to push The Incredibles 2 to the Best Animated Feature win. Because I think Disney doesn't want it to be obvious that this is all conspiracy.
This is a major conspiracy.
I don't think Disney wants to
be
obvious.
The New York FCC, you think that Disney is like, let this other animated
No. I think this is legitimately win, but I think that Disney didn't expect Spider-Man's Into the Spider-Verse to be so well-received, and that it is, it's going to say, well, we need the obvious winner to win then. We can't have our own picture upset our own picture.
I'm interpreting your conspiracy theory as you think all the New York film critics are paid off off by Disney, and this was a planted win on purpose to make the narrative look better.
I think everybody's paid off by Disney.
I'm kidding. We like a lot of the New York Film Twitter critics. We mix it up with them on the internets. This is fascinating. I'm really excited now. I'm almost overly excited for Spider-Verse.
Same here.
Some other notables, First Reform, another best screenplay. Richard E. Grant and Regina King win more Best Supporting Actor and Actress awards. We have another shocker to me, Minding the Gap wins Best Documentary. I thought that's a very strong movie. It's a B85 all day for me. I enjoyed that on Hulu when I still had Hulu. I enjoyed it. I liked RBG. I liked Minding the Gap. They're not even close to the level of Won't You Be My Neighbor.
Yeah, something
I'm
interesting
sorry.
Shaping up here. Although maybe it is a good thing because, again, Jane did win a lot of precursors last year and fell short of the cut. So maybe the precursors don't go to the favorite and the favorite does make the cut and win the Oscar. So who knows? We'll see what happens there.
Minding the Gap, true story, a great documentary project that slogs. I'm like falling asleep snoring for so much of that. But then again, so I did that for the last year's Best Documentary winner, the Russian...
The doping scandal one.
I forget the freaking name of it, folks. That, talk about boring. I could barely pay attention to that one, too. It's just not half as good. I'm sorry. Maybe I have caveman taste for my documentary. Maybe I'm that kind of film critic right now. I don't know. Best First Film, though, went to Bo Burnham with Eighth Grade. We're excited about
this.
Yeah,
Bo knows momentum. Already his seventh win for award season. It warms my heart to see that Eighth Grade isn't being forgotten. I would love to see him and Elsie Fisher and the screenplay for Eighth Grade make some noise when the nominations for the Academy Awards roll around. But let's get Toni Collette some of the same momentum now, right?
Toni Collette needs a re-push. She is an all-timer in terms of horror movies. She might have the best horror movie performance since Misery.
It is awesome. It is awesome.
Jodie Foster.
I will not argue either of those points.
Just because it's weird doesn't mean it shouldn't get nominated. I mean, everything she's played in the subtext.
And gross. It does have some grossness. Oh, it has gross. Some gore. Yeah, without question. But again, look at the performance. All right, guys, that's a little catch-up. That's the Oscar race update as it stands right now, and this is the end of MMO Weekly, so we hope that we got your week started to a good foot here, and there's going to be a lot of news to come this week, but don't worry. When it does happen, we're going to be there next week all the same just to catch you up and get your perspective right for the upcoming Academy Awards and more awards season to come. Michael, any last words of wisdom?
Won't You Be My Neighbor is a superior film than these other documentaries. I like these other documentaries. I gave them Bs. I enjoyed those watches. It's a freaking A movie, Won't You Be My Neighbor. It's a superior film. Argue with me. Come at me, bro.
Get your week started on the right foot with also Mike yelling at you about Mr. Rogers, just as you always imagined. Guys, reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us. Questions, comments, concerns, as always, want to hear from you about anything you heard here, any of our 6 degrees of MMO. You can reach out to us on Twitter, Facebook, social, any of the social medias. Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MM, and Oscar on the Twitter machine, Mike, and Oscar at gmail.com, and on Reddit. We are available everywhere you hear pods. If you type in Mike, and Oscar, you will see our cartoon smiling faces in Santa outfits looking back and waving at you. And other than that, enjoy your week, enjoy your work week, more OSPs to come, more movie reviews to come, and a little Christmas magic coming from MMO this week as well. We'll check you next time.
See ya.